I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and welcome to Policy Matters, WJCT's program that takes a close look at public policy issues that matter to you and to the future of our city, state, and nation. On today's program, we have two very special guests. One is Dr. Makaziwe Mandela, the oldest daughter of Nelson Mandela. She is in Jacksonville from South Africa to receive the Global Citizen Award from Jacksonville University tomorrow. And tomorrow, as recognized by the United Nations in 2009, is Nelson Mandela International Day. She'll be here to celebrate that day. We're also very pleased to have a member of the board of the Mandela Family Foundation, Khalil Osiris, an author, international speaker, activist, and one of the leading and trusted advisors to Dr. Mandela and the founding CEO of Reflecting Freedoms. His story is truly remarkable, spending 20 years in prison himself. I hope you'll stay with us for this very special program. Our first guest is Mr. Osiris, and Khalil, welcome to the program.
So great to be here, Rick. Thank you so much for having me.
Khalil, it's a pleasure to have you here and have Dr. Mandela here. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover, a lot to talk about,
yes.
The legacy of Nelson Mandela and what's going on here in Jacksonville and the important work of Dr. Mandela. But your story is very compelling, and I wonder if you would share with our listeners your personal story.
First of all, I'm so happy to be here, Rick, and I am deeply, deeply grateful for the fact that you thought it was important for my story to be part of the broader narrative about Nelson Mandela and my dear friend, Dr. Makaziwe Mandela. Usually when you hear that people have served 20 years in prison, it gives you great reason for pause and skepticism and just overall concern about, well, how are they after 20 years in prison and what did they go for? And we make all kinds of assumptions generally about what kind of childhood they must have had to end up in a place like that. And what I'll say is I know that the typical narrative is that the person came from a broken home and their parents were absent and there was probably some drug addiction and a whole host of other horrors, which have all too often become normal in terms of how we think about those in the criminal justice system. But what I'd like to say right from the start is that I actually had great parents. I had the benefit of a really good education. And at the end of the day, I made horrible choices. And I emphasize that because I understand that there's a broken criminal justice system that we, that all of us are looking at how to correct, how to change. And very often we get narrowly focused on what's broken in the system, which is external to our choices and external to our own journeys at a personal level. And so I emphasize that because I recognize that in my own story, I have to be honest and authentic about how I ended up in prison for 20 years. And specifically, I'd like to say that having the benefit of great parents and a good education and then recognizing at the same time that I was actually quite privileged in some ways. During my childhood, it was a very turbulent time, the heels of the civil rights movement. And there was an organization that emerged called the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. That organization galvanized young people around the country, basically around the idea that we could make a difference, that there's something we could do personally that mattered so much that if we didn't do it, we were being irresponsible. And as a young person, 12, 13 years old, hearing that I could make a difference excited me. I was so absolutely bought in to being able to do that, that I increasingly got involved with the party and was conscientized by the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. What I can say in short is that I went from being a very, really kind of happy-go-lucky kid to being an increasingly frustrated and angry young man, and that anger turned into delinquency. And ultimately, at 17 years old, I was convicted of a robbery and sent to prison. Being 17 years old, and, you know, as a boy, you think you're a man until you meet men. I had no idea what was ahead of me at that point in my life. But what I did recognize is that nothing in my life up to that point could have prepared me for what I was about to face.
How long were you in prison this first
trip? I served 5 years in prison from 17 to 22 years old. And
then you got out?
I got out. It was a horrific period. I got out, and I can just say that I was worse than before I went in terms of my thinking, my values about other human beings, because I had been in an environment which was called gladiator training. In other words, it was to literally nurture the worst in you in terms of survival. And I had no idea what I could become under those circumstances until I was there. But to get out at 22 and still be angry, it was inevitable that I'd go back.
And you did, I take it.
No doubt about it. At 25, I was on my way back to prison. And this time the judge looked at me and he just said, you could have been here as a defendant, a lawyer defending a client. You could have been here as a prosecutor defending the citizens of our great state. But you decided to be here today as a criminal defendant. And my only regret is I cannot give you more time.
How long did he sentence you to?
A maximum sentence of 75 years. And which was essentially for a 25-year-old like me, it was a life sentence. And it was very easy at that moment to say, this is clearly the result of racism. This is clearly the result of a broken system. And my going to prison is very much a reflection of what's wrong with America. But here's what I recognize, Rick, and I think this was, I know this was the turning point for my life. I wasn't going back to prison because I had been in the Black Panther Party. I wasn't going because I had made a mistake. I was on my way back to prison because of my choices. It was that recognition, that ownership.
The full responsibility for what you
had done. Total accountability for my own choices. The other side of it was I recognized that my choices were so powerful that they actually could create a circumstance in which I'd find myself facing the rest of my life in prison. And so I realized also that my choices were strong enough, powerful enough, and meaningful enough to turn my life around, and I could deconstruct.
What year did you begin in prison, start that prison?
1976. It's a funny thing. June 1976, I was sent to prison at 17 years old. And in June 1976 in South Africa, they had the Soweto uprisings. So I can imagine, had I been in South Africa at that period in my life, what I would have been doing there.
Now, what is remarkable is in the second time you went,
yes,
1984,
yes,
Nelson Mandela is in prison in South Africa.
Yes.
He had been in there since the early 60s. He wouldn't come out of prison until 1990. And something that he was doing inspired you and caused you to write a letter to Dr. Mandela.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I saw in Nelson Mandela an example of what was possible for someone at the bottom of life in a prison cell to literally impact the world in ways that were positive, in ways that reflected the best of our humanity. And I was deeply, deeply moved by his own example and the narrative of his story. So when I followed current events very closely, and I discovered that Mkhazi Mandela, his eldest daughter, was attending UMass Amherst at the same time that I was attending Boston University. In prison.
You were seeking your undergraduate degree.
Yes.
And later got your master's degree at Boston University in prison.
In prison at Norfolk Prison Colony in Massachusetts. So I said, I'm going to write Mkhazi Mandela because I see in her a connection. I see here's someone on a foreign Fulbright scholarship. First of all, one of the most prestigious scholarships that you could earn. And she's here. I saw that in the newspaper she was being courted by the political elite and taken all over the country and the white invitations to the White House.
Did she write you back?
She wrote me back.
And did you begin to write to each other?
And we became pen pals.
In the 1980s?
In the 1980s, Rick, and at literally 1986 is when I made a commitment that once I was released from prison in America and successful, I moved to South Africa and worked in schools and prisons to do work that mattered. And
well, from what you've told me,
yes,
your correspondence with her fell off.
Yes.
But your commitment did not. So you were released from prison in 1999.
Yes.
You'd served a total of 20 years in prison, and you, in keeping your promise, found your way back to South Africa in 2011. Tell us about that.
And totally by coincidence, seeming coincidence, I was in a store, the Whole Foods of South Africa. It's called Woolworths. I walked around the corner and there was Dr. Mandela. I looked at her, I said, Mkhazi. And she looked back at me and like, and who are you? And I was like, Khalil. And she said, Khalil Osiris from prison in America.
That's amazing, by the way.
It was totally something that could only happen by divine providence.
And so from that point to now, those over the last 8 years, you have become both a trusted advisor,
yes,
and a member of the board of directors for the House of Mandela Family Foundation.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that and the mission.
Well, first of all, the House of Mandela Family Foundation has dedicated itself to the idea that the vision and values of Nelson Mandela should live on beyond the man. And Dr. Makaziwe Mandela has been absolutely amazing in keeping his vision and his values alive in real life, real time projects. And so the Memorial Garden Project, which is the main kind of focus of the House of Mandela Family Foundation, is to build a space for global citizens to come and participate in a way that changes the world for the better. So in the place of his birth and his burial, the Memorial Garden is being created as a project to say to the world, it may seem impossible. And in fact, Madiba himself, Nelson Mandela himself said, it always seems impossible until it's done.
Until it's done. Well, I want to talk a little bit about his legacy and the work of Dr. Mandela. Tomorrow, here in Jacksonville, she will be receiving the Global Citizen Award from Jacksonville University in her own right for her work.
Yes.
And of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, in 2009, the United Nations declared July 18th his birthday. Tomorrow, he would have been 101 years old.
Yes.
Nelson Mandela Day, or Mandela Day.
Yes.
What is it that caused you and Dr. Mandela to approach Jacksonville University as the place to sort of celebrate and recognize this day tomorrow?
Well, first of all, I saw in President Tim Kos, an example of the absolute highest embodiment of the vision and values that we speak to around Nelson Mandela. It's a recognition of our shared humanity. It's a call to each of us to live to our higher angels, to lift ourselves up, but not just in a philosophical sense. What I saw in President Kos is someone who's building a space at this university, Jacksonville University, that's not just good for the university. The things that he's doing is benefiting the surrounding community, citizens who would probably never even imagine that Jacksonville University is possible for them are now hearing about it, learning about it, and beneficiaries of the good that one man, President Tim Kos, has dedicated himself to even without them knowing him. And I think that really speaks to what Madiba, Nelson Mandela himself, stood for and dedicated his life to. It is to recognize that this journey is bigger than you, bigger than any one of us individually. And we have not just an opportunity, but a responsibility to be the person who makes the change that we want to see in the world.
Well, for 3 days, today, July 17th, tomorrow, and the next day, you and Dr. Mandela will be doing a number of things. We're a little short on time, but
yes.
Can you give our listeners sort of an overview of what's going on this evening,
yes,
tomorrow, and Friday?
Well, this evening we'll have a kickoff event at the stadium, TIAA Stadium, which will basically be a recognition of four local leaders who have been change makers in multiple spaces that have impacted society in a way that's really positive. And we'll have a gala event, which will just be a celebration of local leaders. On the 18th, which is the anchor event, we'll have everything at Jacksonville University. We'll start with 11 o'clock, part of it that's open to the public, and 12:30 to 1:30, we'll have another event, which would be a fireside chat. And then we'll have the Jacksonville Jaguar players coming at 5:30, and we're doing
The 67 minutes.
67 minutes of activism, and Dr. Makaziwe Mandela will be there.
Khalil Osiris, he's a board member of the Nelson Mandela Family Foundation and the CEO of Reflecting Freedom. On the next half of our program, we are very, very pleased to have Dr. Mandela. I hope you'll stay with us. I'm Rick Mullaney with the Jacksonville University Public Policy Institute, and you're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT.
Hi, I'm David Luckin. Join me tonight at 9 for the Electro Lounge. We're going to flash back tonight. We're going to play music from 30, 40, 50 years ago. Let's go back and see what we were listening to in the summer of 69. We'll have that and so much more. 9 o'clock, Electro Lounge, only on 89.9 WJCT. See you then.
I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat.
Maybe you're getting out of your car and need to turn off the radio, but you can keep listening to the live stream of WJCT 24 hours a day through the WJCT app. Get it for Apple or Android.
Welcome back to Policy Matters, WJCT's program on public policy matters that matter to you. I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University, and thank you for staying with us. We are extraordinarily pleased to have as our next guest Dr. Makaziwe Mandela. She is the daughter of Nelson Mandela, and she's here in Jacksonville traveling from South Africa, quite a ride of 18 hours, to receive the Global Citizen Award tomorrow at Jacksonville University, and also tomorrow on Mandela Day, which will be celebrated globally, to recognize Nelson Mandela International Day, as recognized by the UN in 2009. Dr. Mandela, welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you very much.
And welcome to this program.
Thank you very much.
Tomorrow, the rest of the world will be recognizing and celebrating Mandela Day. And I know you get asked this a lot, but what does the legacy of your father mean to you?
I think for me personally, as a daughter, it shows what the human spirit is capable of. And that if you are determined and set your mind, you can achieve anything against all odds. And I think for me, it's all about the issue of compassion, of sharing, and also of forgiveness. Because my dad says very strongly, it takes courage to forgive another person. And forgiveness is not something that we should take lightly, because forgiveness is not freeing the person who has oppressed you or done evil to you. It is actually freeing your own self.
You know, it's an incredible legacy. And for our younger listeners, everyone knows the name Nelson Mandela, but to think that he spent 27 years in prison and came out the way you described, with compassion and forgiveness in his heart, it's understandable that the rest of the world looks at what the hardship he endured. But my question is, what about you and your family? In 1962, when he was first arrested, I think you were about 7 years old maybe or so. And Can you describe what his imprisonment meant to you and your family and what you endured?
Look, I mean, we grew up without a father being there. And it was actually very difficult. But you know, Rick, for me, I never look at, because in a sense, although we didn't have a father, you know, in the African community, you always have a whole family, you know, because there's a saying, there's a proverb in the African language that says Ubuntu, Umuntu, Gumuntu Gabantu, which means you are because of the community in which you live. And so I grew up in a society where the spirit was very strong, although my dad was not there. And we felt, you know, all the hardships and the loneliness of not having a parent there. But when I think about it, now that I'm out, there are families that suffered much more than us, who didn't have both parents, who didn't have, you know, my mother was a qualified nursing sister. So at least he could provide and he could close the gap of not having a father there. But there were families that were worse off than us. And you know, I had very strong parents as I was growing up, and they told us to be strong and that nothing should defeat us and that we should always try to be the best in our lives and try to look at the other conditions of other people that are worse than us.
So despite that hardship, it sounds like you inherited both his spirit and, quite frankly, I'm going to talk a little bit about education, the importance he put on education. He, some people don't know, was a lawyer and actually ended up getting an advanced degree while in prison. Mm-hmm. He and Khalil have that in common. Mm-hmm. And you yourself, a Fulbright scholarship taking you to the University of Massachusetts at Amherst for both undergraduate and your PhD. Can you talk, because I know this is a priority for you, the important role of education in societal change, both in your life and in your father's life, and more broadly for South Africa?
I think my dad has been always an advocate of education because he believed very strongly that education can change one's life and can change society. And so he encouraged me every time I would, you know, get my degree, say, okay, now go and do your master's degree. You get your master's, says, no, go and do a doctorate. You know, that's the type of father I had who encouraged that. And truly, education is said to be the great equalizer. But, and I think that what I'm learning, education alone cannot be the great equalizer alone. We have to actually fight to get rid of inequities in society. Because when you do that, we are really are creating a more equal society. And yes, education is important, but you can't give people education while in poverty. They are not going to succeed. So we've got to find ways of getting them out of poverty. And one of my major goals now is to use education through programs of enhancing food security in our rural areas to teach people how to be commercial farmers, to be better farmers, to fend for themselves. Because by feeding people, and you are actually not just feeding them alone, you are actually giving them skills to create wealth for themselves and create wealth for their children.
Now, is this one of the top food security you've mentioned, of course, poverty? Are these some of the top priorities that you have with the House of Mandela Family Foundation?
Yes, the food security is a top priority for me because I think that we all need food on our table. And if we are going to breed good, responsible citizens, we have to have our children go to school not on empty stomachs, because then they can't take in what they're reading. They have to have full stomachs. And the other thing is, by doing food security, we are ensuring the sustainability of the next generation.
In South Africa itself, I take it there's some great opportunities. For example, your father, although very educated too, was a farmer mm-hmm. early. And what are some of the opportunities for some of the land, for example, in South Africa and other places to help enhance food security? Because I know it's such a big priority for you.
I think that, you know, South Africa has a lot of land, but that land is lying fallow because, you know, it takes a lot of money to even buy seed. You know, you have to have water. And I think that why our people are lacking behind in terms of agriculture is that agriculture has developed. You know, there are new technologies. You don't need big family land these days to be able to grow the necessary vegetables and nutritious foods to put on your table. You need small land. And those are the technology, agro technologies, that I want our people to be exposed to find simple ways of farming.
Now, on the food security piece, which is a top priority for you, I know there are a lot of issues, a lot of humanitarian efforts that you are supportive of. And certainly I've read and seen that equality, particularly for women and women's roles in South Africa. Can you address that for a moment and how you are concerned about and what you'd like to see happen as it relates to equality and the role of women in South Africa?
Well, I think that it is now a well-known fact that there are more female-headed households in Africa than anywhere in the world. And women are nurturers. They bring up the children. And that actually with women, when they work, 90% of their wages are going back into the family, whether it's feeding the family, taking children to schools. And I do think that if we can help women to succeed in agriculture, you're actually saving whole communities, neighborhoods, you're saving the whole society. And for me, that's why it's important, I know, to work with women, because if we do that, we can actually change the society.
Poverty, food security, women's equality, sounds a lot like the big efforts that your father made too. Are there others that are top priorities for you that you care deeply about? I've seen that there's a lot of, you're involved in so many, but I...
Well, for me, there are three priorities for me. It's actually, you know, preserving my father's legacy through a legacy project that I'm doing, which is the memorial garden for my dad. We've already completed phase one of that memorial garden. We're looking at completing phase two and phase three of the memorial garden. And this memorial garden, we're naming it the Garden of Freedom, because we believe this is where people would like to come, actually searching for their own personal freedom or community freedom. And when they have walked this memorial garden, they will come up with solutions of how to deal with the social injustice or inequities in their society.
So you've just finished phase one of the
We've
memorial garden.
We've finished phase one of the memorial garden.
Which is a terrific project. Mm-hmm. And how long do you think it'll take to or your timeline for the memorial gardens?
Well, we're looking at perhaps the next 3 years that we'll complete the memorial garden.
And your other two top priorities in addition to
And then, you know, I mean, the food security is also is really one of my passions. I'm not a farmer, but I'm working with people who are experts in the area to help set up what I'm calling a demonstration farm, a teaching farm, where we'll teach people how to breed better chickens, cattle, piggery, and actually also do a vegetable garden.
And your third priority?
And my third priority is the House of Mandela business, where we own a mint and teaching people skills to do jewelry, to do corporate gifting, to do cufflinks, all kinds of things. And this, those are the three of my passions.
Now, this is your first trip to Jacksonville.
Yes.
You've come from South Africa.
Yes.
And I know after here heading to New York and you travel around the world, mm-hmm. when you do, how do you go about carrying that legacy forward?
My father was very passionate about servant leadership, about being the servant of the people. And he did this in many ways. He was a statesman who fought for the liberation of the African people. But also, I think that his values, the values that he grew up with, the values of caring and compassion, the value of being true to yourself is what the legacy my father left us. And I think when you look around the world today and you see that there's starting to be sprouts of negativity, yeah. of raising the differences amongst groups and religions and ethnic groups and different sexes, we've got to go back to those values of saying, I am because you are there or somebody else is there. We've got to go to the values of unity, because without unity, we can't talk about social justice in this world. We've got to learn to work together and hold each other's hands and create a better world for all of us.
You're listening to Policy Matters on WJCT. I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. We're very pleased to have a very special guest who's flown here all the way from South Africa, Dr. Makaziwe Mandela. She is the oldest daughter of Nelson Mandela. She's here in Jacksonville to receive the Global Citizen Award from Jacksonville University tomorrow, and also to celebrate Mandela Day, July 18th, tomorrow, which would have been his 101st birthday.
I hope that people of Jacksonville and people around the world realize that unity is at the core of us creating a better world. Yes, one person, like my father, can be the torchbearer, can show the way, but we also have to support and be torchbearer. We have to build together. We've got to learn together. We've got to carry the torch to the future together, not as divided. Yes, the differences are important. Diversity is important in this world. But we can't always be enhancing and emphasizing differences. We have to look at the good in the differences and the diversity that we can and harness it to create a better future for all.
Dr. Mandela, thank you so much. That's today's final word. Thank you so much to Khalil Osiris and Dr. Mandela. You've been listening to Policy Matters on WJCT 89.9 FM. I'm Rick Mullaney, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Hope you've enjoyed today's special program and hope you'll join us again next time. We'll be right back.